podcasting live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Now, in case y'all didn't know, they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider. And you can find video archives, merch, and more on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. Now, here are your hosts, two guys who've been broadcasting online since 1996, the godfathers of podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
Hello, everyone. It is Thursday, November 9th. This is the 158th installment of this shit show. I'm Donnie, and the man over there next to me is the salt to my pepper, the bow to my arrow, the hammer to my nail. That is Chris Tidwell, the notorious TID. What's up, Tid?
Nail and hammer. Well, it's a lot better than hammer and shone or hammer and beefcake. Or I'm sure there could have been a lot of other references, so I'm glad that you just went with that one.
Hammer and Beefcake were the dream team, baby. Don't shit on them.
I ever tell you the story about how they refused to go on after me and Magnus one time on a show?
Hold on. Let me put this into layman's terms for people out there that don't know anything about the wrestling world. You're saying that Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus Beefcake refused to perform after you?
Yeah.
How bad did you stink the place up?
No. They did not want to do their match after me and Magnus were doing our match. We were doing a bit of some crazy stuff that involved ladders and silliness like that. So they're like, we're not going on after that. They wanted to go on before that. It was really funny because it was young in my career.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was in front of, there was a hell of a turnout. It was a great show. Everybody,
if you were wrestling Magnus, this was probably 20 years. You were probably like, what, 52 or something?
No. I was closer to retirement before I started.
Yeah. You were close to retirement in your rookie year.
Absolutely. So,
speaking of which, since we're making age jokes, we should mention.
I'm making jokes.
Notorious TID Chris Tidwell will take another trip around the sun this weekend. Happy birthday, motherfucker.
Sorry, your mic was breaking out. What, again?
You're old as dirt.
No, that is not true. That is not true. Dirt is, okay, maybe I'm older than dirt. Yeah.
There are some forms of dirt younger than you.
Yeah, I'm pretty much working my way into that, like, coal area. where right before coal becomes a diamond, I guess. I'm hoping
you're not going to make it to diamond phase.
Come on.
I'm sorry, brother.
All right.
I'm not holding out hope for you. But listen, I don't know what you've got cooking this weekend, but happy early birthday.
Thank you.
And I hope it's a beaut.
Well, I'm just happy that I do get to see another birthday. You know what I mean? There's plenty of people lately. If I must segue into craziness here before we go on, there's plenty of people who will not see another birthday.
Yeah, it's been a somber week for the Godfathers of Podcasting. I got to tell you, last Friday night, sounds like the beginning of a song, but it's not. Last Friday night, I got a message from a friend of mine who I've known since I was a teenager, who I haven't spoken to in probably 20 years. And she contacts me to say, "Hey, really sorry to tell you this, but Nat passed away." And Nat is Nathaniel Lynch, or I should say Corporal Nathaniel Lynch, a 24, 25 year member of the Canadian Army. When I was 13 years old, Tid, this guy was like my best friend in the world, right? And he was up until the time he enlisted in the Army. And when he went off to the Army, it was somewhere around the time you and I started hanging out. Because he used to come down to our bar. He used to come hang out at Whiskey Saigon and chill with us there. And it was shortly after that that he felt like his life was taking a dip, you know? And he needed to clean himself up. So he went into the military and had himself a very long and productive career there. he left the military, had an early retirement in 2018. We got together, hung out a bunch of times after that. I don't like speaking ill of the dead, but he and I had these conversations many times when he was alive. I had to distance myself a little bit from my longtime best friend because his demons, you know what I'm talking about, Tid? Mm-hmm. His demons had really changed him as a person.
Sure.
And I urged him and begged him and begged him to get help. And he wasn't interested in getting help. And that same friend who called me to let me know he had passed, she literally took him for help. And he would constantly sign himself out, not be interested in doing any of that. Got himself into some trouble a couple weeks ago. And this past Friday, he was in hospital, intubated in a medically induced coma, and his family decided to take him off support. And since that day, my head's been in a cloud. I'm not going to lie to you, bro. My head's been in a cloud. Because as much as I pulled away from this dude, because I hated watching him destroy himself, he was like, oh, fuck, man. When I was a kid, he was one of the people I looked up to.
Absolutely.
He was cooler than the other side of the pillow. And I just thought, man, this guy's got his shit all figured out. Knows how to talk to chicks. Knows how to, like, you know, he's fucking slick the way he flips his cell phone one handed. He had the game down. I just thought he was the coolest motherfucker on earth. And, next weekend is going to be his celebration of life. I'm not looking forward to that at all. But Corporal Nathaniel Lynch, my big brother, I will miss you. And unfortunately, that wasn't the end of the bad news, because it was Saturday night. The very next day, I was hanging out and saw a message from a mutual acquaintance of ours. And why don't you tell the rest of that story?
Well, for those of you that do or do not know and have lived under a rock for quite some time, we have a tie with the world of professional wrestling. Very much so that, like, in well, as you were saying, Saturday night, one of our Ontario wrestling brothers wrestled his last match and literally walked through the curtain and fell into cardiac arrest. And as much as anybody could help him, he didn't come out of this one. I'm talking about Rob Thompson. I'm talking about, to the wrestling community, was known as Rob Rage.
Yeah.
And I personally, I would be lying if I said that I hadn't been in the ring or in locker rooms with Rob any less than 50 times, throughout his career. And It's a shame when somebody who loves the business that much is taken from it. But one thing that we have to remember is that, you know, he also went out exactly how you could possibly imagine him going out. A larger than life character on the independent scene in Ontario that, you know, he lit up a locker room because he was salt of the earth human being, was very, very polite, always a nice guy. But, you know, listen, things happen in very weird and mysterious ways. I will say this before we switch, because I want to tell this quick story.
Yeah, please.
Rob Rage is part of one of mine, if not one of a legendary finish in the world of professional wrestling. And let me tell you, so I'm working Rob Rage on a fair show one time.
How long ago would this have been?
Maybe 10 years ago. Okay. Maybe a little, roughly around there.
Okay.
We're working on this fair show. And he says to me, he goes, what do you want to do for the finish? I said, well, how about we make it a count out finish? We're just going to fight around to the, you know, around to the outside. We'll go on to some of the rides and fight on and off of them. And you know what I mean? We'll like go up to the, we'll go up to the little, they had one of these little squirty, you know, make the horse race across with by squirting the water into the thing, you know, Yeah, we'll look at that, you know, squirt them in the face or whatever. Like just fight around the stuff, right?
Sorry, I missed this match.
A gimmick, a comedy gimmick match.
Yeah.
Comes time for the finish. I fight him over to this Ferris wheel thing that, like, you know, comes along. They lock you in and it goes up to the top or whatever. Boom, boom, boom. I hit him, knock him in there, close the thing. I pull the handle. I put him up to the top. I stop the machine. I climb back into the ring, make the referee count to 10. He's stuck at the top of this Ferris wheel, can't get out. That was the finish of the match. It's things like that that Rob Rage was just, okay, let's do it. You know what I mean? He was always open for just having a good time. So it's a shame, Rob Rage, your community of brothers will always miss you. You were a good brother to all of us. So
he was, in addition to being a pro wrestler, he was also an actor, had done a bunch of commercial work.
Yeah, who cares about that shit?
Played the role of Hulk Hogan and the Road Warriors in the in the Dark Side of the Ring documentary.
Yeah, let them pay for a spot to put him over. I put him over how we're going to put him over.
No, I'm just talking about all the things he accomplished in life. But I'll tell you what, this is the last thing I'll say is you mentioned how polite a guy he was. Mm. I'll tell you, man, of all the anti-vaxxers I've ever argued with, he was the sweetest.
Yeah.
Like he really was the sweetest anti-vax nut job conspiracy theorist that I ever chatted with. Like he would literally put his arms around you and go, hey, I respect you.
But he knew that birds were real and you know, Earth is not flat.
I mean, you don't know that.
Tremendous. So other than that, it's good to be back. It's good to have some fun.
So this week's episode is dedicated to Rob and Nat.
Yeah.
And once we get our guest on the show, we're going to raise a glass and we're going to toast.
100%.
All right. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, it is time right now for the big hello. And this week's guest is making his first appearance on the program, but he's certainly no stranger to the show itself. I first met this man when I was just a toddler. Walking into the convenience store his parents owned across the street from the house I was living in, my folks would take me over there, chat up with his family because, hey, they're all Portuguese, so why not? And I thought it was pretty rad because when I left, I had a free lollipop. Years later, this same dude ended up dating and then marrying my cousin, and he's been a massive part of my life ever since. He's always had the most fascinating existence. Like the Dos Equis guy looks at him and goes, bro, you are so interesting. From his days working for a major airline where he visited virtually every part of the globe to the last two decades as a national representative for a major union, he's always been right in the middle of the fight. Over the years, he's written plenty of short stories and different pieces that have been published. And as a writer, I was always blown away by his ability to have such well-developed three-dimensional characters, especially in such a finite amount of words. Now he's crossed a major milestone off his bucket list, having just published and released his first book entitled Compassion Fatigue. It's a collection of short stories of the indecent past, weird present, and feared future. Ladies and gentlemen, when I was 10, he introduced me to punk rock. When I was 11, his nephew and I snuck into his den and watched really bad pornography for the first time. When I was 12, I realized how being a passenger in a car doing 120 in an underground parking lot could cause mild forms of PTSD. When I was 13, he stood next to me as my sponsor in my confirmation. When I was 28, I asked him to be part of my wedding party. And when that marriage ended, I wondered why the fuck he didn't love me enough to talk me out of it to begin with. Just last week, I asked him to join Tid and I tonight so we could talk to him about this great new project. Hey, meu primo, it's my cousin, the man who will lead the uprising and is the unofficial head of the revolution. This is Humberto da Silva.
Oh, man. Holy. I've never had an introduction like that. Holy crap. Now I'm scared.
I don't know what I just joined up with here, but it sounded very Castro-esque, and I'm in nonetheless.
Hey, it was a, like, the book release was at Castro's Lounge. It was like Castro was there himself. You got to come down, have a beer down there. You'll see what it's about. But I got to say, thank you for that introduction, Don. And like, you know, after your mom used to bring you over for me to help you with the essays you didn't turn in, I'm surprised that, you know, I ended up ever being on this show. But love the show, guys. And thanks very much for having me because, hey, I'm in the next phase of my life now. And I got to flog books, right? I got to flog this book all the time. And that's what I do now. So thanks so much for giving me this opportunity to be here. And actually, just want to correct you on one thing.
Oh, okay.
You didn't walk into the variety store. The weird thing is Lena was carrying you. Now, Lena is about 5'1", and Don is now the tallest Portuguese man on record. So it's kind of ironic that, that you know, the first time I saw you, you were being carried by a small woman. And that's yeah. Hilarious.
Yeah, these days you got to pay for that kind of attention.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you'd have to pay a lot because you'd have to be a bodybuilder, right? You'd have to be huge. Yeah.
Get the forklift.
Yeah, no, I remember those days in West Hill, man. You know, it's amazing how fast time just fucking disappears on you, eh?
It's like, seriously, it's not even a joke, man. Like, I think back to the last nearly 30 years that I've been hanging out with Tid over there. And it's like, so, that just went by in the snap of a finger, you know? And then I think about, like, I have vivid memories of, you know, being a kid and looking up to you. I was just talking about in the first segment, I was talking about my buddy, Nat Lynch, who just passed away, who was a guy who I looked up to. Like, I had a short list of people back then that I really looked up to, right? It was you. It was my cousin, Charlie. It was my friend, Nat. It was my dad, and that's it. Yeah, man, and that was pretty much it. So I want to say this real quick before we go any further. We did mention this week's episode is dedicated to Rob Rage and Nat Lynch. And Beto, because of you, you are the one that gave me an appreciation for this. I've got a nice bottle of Writer's Tears right here, which is my absolute favorite Irish whiskey. Tid, I highly recommend this shit. Beto got me in this tradition of breaking this shit open when there was someone who had passed away. But I'll tell you what, man, I like this stuff so much, I'll drink it anytime. But tonight, it seems apropos.
Always drink to the dead. Always drink to the dead, right? It's a great Irish tradition. And if you know, if ever I pass, I hope that somebody will use my coffin as a bar rail, right? And just, I want to hear the hammering of the glasses down when they're empty. And that's my kind of party. That's the way it should be, right? And I'm sorry. I mean, I shout out, you know, recently, my great cousin in Portugal, Graça Amaral Mina, we called her. Great friend in Manchester, England. I got to see him last year. Sean Johnson, great man, passed away as well. And recently, you know, an old high school friend, Debbie Hogan, passed away in her sleep, 1 year older than I was, man. So yeah, time passes through. We pass through time and celebrate the time you're here and drink to the dead.
It's funny you mentioned Writer's Tears, and it just brings me right away to a friend of ours who used to drink Writer's Tears all the time before he passed. Probably one of the greatest human beings I'll ever know in my existence. I'm talking about Otto. Peter Corneal was a huge.
Right. I totally forgot that Otto used to love this stuff.
So when you hold up the bottle of Writer's Tears, that's who it takes me to right away. So absolutely. Good choice. Well done. All right. You can stay. So a book. Right? You're like, you're peddling a book, you're middle-aged guy, you're peddling a book. What is compassion fatigue? Like, explain that to me.
Well,
because it sounds like something like that, like left liberal cucks would come up with or something.
Although, hey, man, I'm not a left liberal. Let's be clear. I'm a radical socialist. Okay. Let's just be clear about that right off the hop.
But it's, all right. It's, so explain to me.
It's future shock, right?
Okay.
It's, It's future shock. But what it is, you know, you want to feel for everybody, every story on TV, every cause, you know, that they put on there, you want to feel for it. You want to do the right thing, and et cetera. But eventually you just run out of compassion because it's kind of a chemical process in your brain. And that's what's happening to a lot of people. And the story itself, and actually this was you know, the high point of my writing existence, because it was anthologized in the, you know, Best Canadian Stories 1992. So the story is just a bunch of snippets of people experiencing future shock in the middle of a war, which was, you know, the first Gulf War in, you know, 91, and coming to realize that they just didn't have it anymore, right? And I can read a passage a little later if you want that kind of explains that. But that's what compassion fatigue is. However, when you search on Amazon, you got to search compassion fatigue Humberto da Silva. Otherwise, you get a bunch of psychological manuals, you know, telling you how to deal with shit. And I don't get any royalties, so we gotta get that straight right off the bat. Please put my name in the search on Amazon, otherwise you get a bunch of left liberal social shit.
We will put the correct link up on Godfathers of Podcasting. Oh,
thank you, so nice.
.com. You know, you were gracious enough to send us over a copy of the book, and I haven't finished it, full disclosure. I've started it. I'm really enjoying it. And again, it's like, you know, I've read some of your shorts over the years, and I've read stuff that you've had your hands in. I mean, I can't even imagine, because, you know, I'm not really a short story writer. I've always felt like I have screenplays in me that I want to throw up someday when I have time. But the concept of writing a short and having characters that are so, like, developed, you know, and I read these and I go, Jesus, how the hell does he put these together? You know, and like, you look at the psychological depth of your characters, and I'm thinking to myself, man, you find a way to balance their very obvious character flaws with their redemptive qualities, and you're doing it in a very small amount of words. Like, how do you do this?
The short story is really a Canadian form. I mean, I think Canadians mastered the short story. I mean, Chekhov wrote short stories, etc. But the beauty of a short story is that you gotta, you know, brevity is the soul of wit. You gotta get to the point quick. Mm. And if you don't get to the point quick, you're gonna lose somebody. And quite frankly, people don't really read anymore. They scroll. And the short story is actually a good place to scroll through it, because, you know, a decent short story you can read in the time it takes to take a shit. But it's also good for going to bed, because you can read it just before you go to bed, etc. And you can write, I've seen stories that are a page long, where if you have the ability to string the words together right, you can make it work. And I mean, as a screenwriter, you know that too. You've got to be very economical with your words. I mean, my next book's already written, and it's got a couple of novellas in it, but it's also got a bunch of satellite short stories, because people think that way. People don't think in full, huge, long novels. People think in terms of a story you can tell over a beer. Or, yeah, you know, a story that, you know, somebody can tell you before you tell them your best latest story, right? So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just it's the way I think, and it's an economical way to write. You can dash one off at work when the boss isn't looking.
So don't bore us. Get to the chorus.
All right. You want me to read Compassion Fatigue? I tell you what, I'm gonna read little
bit. Here's always been my thing, though. Okay. Like with reading books, like I know how to read. Yes, I know how to put stuff together like that. Do I take the time to do it? Absolutely not. And here's why, because every single time that I try to sit down and read a book, okay, I'll get like two or three pages in and completely forget what I've already read. Like it just disappears from me that fast. I need to have that visual stimulation or somebody saying it to me, like it's a conversation piece. You know what I mean? That you hear like that. I just don't take it in. Do you think that that's what it is with a lot of people now, is that everybody takes in information differently? You know what I mean? So you speak about how you have to get them like within one page, within that first minute. We live in a TikTok society right now, it seems, right? Where you only have 140 characters on your X or Twitter or whatever it is this week. You know, you have to get and engage them extremely fast, right? So when all fiction, I assume, right? The premises,
90%
drawn from.
Yeah, I can't say, but some of it's what you call creative nonfiction. Like somebody tells you a story, you don't get all the details, you make up the details, and there's a couple of creative nonfiction. But yeah, you're absolutely right. People now have a lot of information coming at them. All kinds of ways. You know, you live in a 1,000 channel universe. You can have anything on demand. So it takes patience to sit down and read a book. And we don't all appreciate stuff like books, right? I mean, I like to watch movies. I'm a film guy, right? So I also think of stories filmically. You know, how would this look visually? I mean, one of the stories is a spy story. And it's like, wow, it was almost a treatment for a film. You know, I thought eventually I'll sit down and script it out. But, you know, even behind a film, even behind, you know, TV, somebody's got to nail down those words first. Otherwise, you know, it's a bunch of people standing around with cameras freestyling, and you may get some shit, but you're not going to get an hour long or a 2 hour long film. You're going to get fragments, which is what TikTok is, a bunch of fragments of interesting stuff.
I try to think of film stuff when I look through magazines a lot of the time, until I get to that center staple, and then you pull out that third page and you know, same thing. Films, right? We're on the same page.
There's always a story to it. I mean, you know, the magazines aren't magazines anymore, because now literally you don't have to pull out a staple. You can just order up pretty much anything off a menu and there it is.
The magazine industry is a very fast dying dinosaur, it seems like. You know what I mean? Other than in very small pockets of Europe, even especially I can speak to it professionally. The adult industry is completely gone, it seems like. Whereas magazines was like, that was the biggest thing with magazines, right? But it's that same thing. It's that short, quick, short story. Penthouse Forum was just a quick letter, or, you know what I mean? A cartoon is just a snippet, right? Yeah. Like everybody for over time, we've been bred, you know, to take in stuff as much as possible, as fast as possible. Right. So,
well, it's funny, 'cause we talk about, you know, in the open, we talked about, you know, and it seems like it's thematic this week. We talked a little bit about the passage of time and how in the blink of an eye, there goes 25, 30 years. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I remember being a young adult, getting on the subway, heading to the office. I've got a newspaper under one arm. I've got the most recent copy of Sports Illustrated in my hand. And I'm sitting there on the subway, and all I've got to do for the next hour is read the sports section from the Globe and Mail and read Sports Illustrated and see what's going on. That doesn't even exist anymore. Like the other day, I'm in a Tid, you know how I am, right? Every year I'm in a fantasy basketball pool. I'm in the one this year with Bethu's kid, and he's kicking my ass right now, and I'm not happy about it. But that all being said, I did actually go to a corner store, and I was like, I'm going to pick up a copy of NBA preview magazine. I can't find one. The written word is dying, bro. I looked the other day. I was at a pharmacy, and I'm like, there's there's like literally a half dozen Sunday newspapers. And in Toronto, the Sunday newspaper used to be the size of the Bible. Now it's a pamphlet. It looks like a flyer for a Walmart sale. There's nothing in there. And I'm just thinking to myself, holy shit, the written word is a dying breed. And then we have people like you, and then friend of the show, Karen Zeifman, who's an author now working on her second book. And we have other authors that have been out here. And I'm thinking to myself, do you ever just think, Beth, do you ever just think like, fuck, this is a medium that is just going away, you know? And then you're forced to get into things like audiobooks, and you're forced to get into things like, you know, social media, you know, a promotion and that sort of thing, because the appreciation for those stack of pages, hard bound, it doesn't feel like it's there the way it used to be.
You're absolutely right, you know, and I can't disagree with you, sadly. I mean, you see a magazine rack in the pharmacy because that's where old people go to get their meds, and that's the, you know, last place, or essentially when you're going to check out with your Geritol and your, you know, your bran muffins. But the reality is, it is. I mean, I keep getting ads now, you know, that ChatGPT will write you a book in 15 minutes. You answer a few questions and it's gone. And you're right. But, you know, there's always going to be people who are doing archaic forms of art. My friends who are painters and write, you don't need to paint anything anymore. You can now get ChatGPT to make you a painting, or you can simply Photoshop yourself any kind of painting, etc. So there's always going to be archaic forms of art. And yeah, I mean, I had to wait late career to really publish a book, although I've written all along the way. And it's important to me to have something tangible in your hand, because we all have a phone now where we have 10,000 photographs, but you know, that phone is going to eventually, you know, be in the garbage or recycled. And what photographs are you going to have? Well, the ones your parents took with an Instamatic or with a Kodak 110 that are sitting in a box, and maybe they've discolored a little bit since the 70s or something, but that's what's going to remain, because yeah, you know, the digital shit, it's as quick here as it's gone. You know, there used to be people who were, before Gutenberg invented the printing press, there were people that would go from fire to fire telling stories. There were troubadours that went from strike to strike, and then they'd write the song about the last strike to tell to the people in the next town about the strike. And that's all gone, right? But, you know, you have to do what you're meant to do. And, you know, ever since my parents forced me to sit at a table and fake that I was doing homework, and I started, you know, writing porn that I was a kid writing. When I was a kid, 12 years old, forced to sit at a desk by my parents, pretending to do homework, and I started imagining all the stuff I would do when I was 16. That's how it started. And then, you know, it's like you start reading books and, you know, making the connections, and that's what I was meant to do. So I'm doing it now. I'm happy.
Yeah. Like, honestly, this has always been your calling. I know that. I got to ask you though, since you mentioned the whole ChatGPT piece, I mean, we just had this long, drawn out writer strike in Hollywood that was really all based on AI. That's what the whole strike was really about. Like, there's a lot of people out there that were just shitting on the writers. Ah, they make good money. What are they fighting for? They're fighting for the fact that these Hollywood studios were threatening to use AI to write scripts. And then all they would do is hire some schlub and go, here, take this, now punch it up, and we'll give you $100, you know, and good luck living off that. So the conclusion to the writer's strike, for anyone out there who doesn't know how this actually ended, the decision was, okay, studios can go use AI to write their scripts, and they can hire a writer to punch it up. But once they give that script to the writer to punch up, the writer now owns it.
That's great. Which
I think is a great concession, you know? And so, as a writer yourself, does, you know, it feels almost like we're talking about like a hostile takeover, right? Like of military proportions, but yeah. Does the concept of AI putting writers out of work, does it scare you?
If I had to make a living writing, yeah, it would scare the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And
it's, even for the next generation.
It's sad because, you know, 100%, you know, Hollywood, anywhere where it comes to making money, if they can get a machine to do it, they're going to get a machine to do it. And the sad thing is that the machines were supposed to do the drudge work so that we could do the art and the fine art and do all the stuff that's beautiful. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like it's going to be, it's not going to be that way. And I mean, I think the huge irony is that we thought, you know, it was going to be Sarah Connor leading us against the robots, but it was Fran Drescher that ended up leading a strike against the robots taking over. So, but yeah, I mean, the future, and that's kind of what the book is about. The future's kind of scary, and we really don't know what's happening. There's a couple of stories about AIs with fully feature AIs, and I don't think it's going to be like the Terminator where the AIs are going to come out and just look to kill us. I think we're just going to be like bycatch. We're going to, they're going to do whatever they want, and they're going to treat us like we treat that orangutan in the Sumatran forest that had to attack a bulldozer because it didn't know what else to do, right? That's, I think, what it's going to be like. But a lot of people are going to lose jobs, for sure. And it's sad that it's writers, because the beauty of technology should be that it takes away the drudge work so that we could all do our art and do beautiful things.
And do some higher level thinking and leave the minutia to the fucking machines.
Yeah, for sure.
I will say this. Last week on the show, we interviewed a longtime friend of ours and friend of the show, Canada's fitness hero, Hal Johnson. He was on the program last week, and he was talking about a book that he had written, you know, about his life and his journey. And he was talking about, maybe I'm due for a second one. And Tid, of course, because he doesn't like to read, he asked if it has pop-ups. And it does not have pop-ups. But that got me thinking, you know, since the written word is not as fashionable as it once was, and we recognize that, and since AI is here to stay and it's not going anywhere, Bethu, I came up with a promotional idea for your book, for Compassion Fatigue, and here it is. Tid, if we can rearrange our cameras there, I got ChatGPT to put together a coloring book of your characters. Sweet. So this is Adnan as built by ChatGPT.
Wow.
We've got a coloring book. Who else do we have? Oh, this is Sunita, or at least what ChatGPT thinks Sunita should be.
Wow, okay.
And then we have we have Harvey Rain.
Wow. I mean, so this is built for Hollywood, man. This is like, you know, that's like played by Matt Damon, right? Doing Harvey C. Rain.
Bro, Harvey Rain is like going, he's straight from Brokeback Mountain. I'm just saying.
Well, right, you know, you don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, right?
I mean, that is a pretty boy on the front, if I'm saying anything right there.
Spent a lot of time in that tank together, you know.
That's a dude that, you know, that is a coxman if I ever saw one, I'll tell you that. But Corporal Harvey C. Rain, as depicted by ChatGPT, if you had to compare it to the guy in your mind's eye, how well did they do?
Hilarious that actually the magazine that published Harvey C. Rain on spec actually put a graphic in it, but it was like, you know, Christ rising to heaven. And right. It looked like it, you know, dude was in like a full, you know, mohair suit, you know, futuristic kind of weird. So yeah, it's what people imagine, right? But ChatGPT, I mean, you know, garbage in, garbage out.
But these apps and these programs and stuff, they give you like 5, 6, 7 options of the same thing, just in different forms, like within minutes, where, you know, I mean, this is the quick turnaround, right? At what point is enough enough, and everybody just, you know, I don't know, does it go back to the underground where people were passing pamphlets back and forth? You know what I mean? You know, little art studios opened up in busted up wineries and stuff, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. What is it? There's clearly something. You almost have to think there's something in motion to make sure that if the narrative is going to be kept under control, who better to keep it under control than the programs that you create, rather than leaving it to the free thinking artist.
Well, if there's actually an artist behind any piece, if there's an artist behind any piece of work, I'm willing to look at it.
Right.
If it's just a computer generating random stuff, you know, that somebody says, you know, that they answer a few questions, it goes and it scrapes actual art off the web, plagiarizes it and feeds it back to you. I don't know that that's art anymore, right? I mean, we may get, you know, programs that are super sophisticated and they can, you know, make a podcast. They can create characters and those characters will seem, will have a certain verisimilitude. They'll be like almost real. But I just don't want to consume that kind of stuff, right? I mean, I want to consume stuff that's real. Like if somebody's, something's being fed to me that's synthetic, I just don't want to have it. I'm not a GMO guy. I'd rather have real food. I'd rather have real art. I'd rather have real experiences. Otherwise, we're in the Matrix. We're all sitting on our loungers, getting fed bullshit by machines.
Yo, Wall-E was a good movie, bro. All right, hey, stop fucking around, man.
I love Wally, but he was like, you know, like one of those gateway robots, you know, you're supposed to think they're cute and all that. And it's like, oh, it's not like that. Not like
all right. Well, give us
we talk about this. Something. Sorry, what was that, Sid?
I was just going to say, give us a little something then.
Oh, before you do, I was just going to say, the more I think about this, the more I realize with the written word no longer being mainstream, you know what it is. It's punk rock. And who knows more about the punk rock movement than our guest? I mean, everything has come full circle, man. The written word, which was, you know, reserved for the highest levels of society, is punk rock.
Hey, anybody can do it. You just have to have the will. And you have to have an idea and you have to have a really interesting way to present it and then just do it. That was the whole ethic of punk. I think it's very much a punk book in that respect. You know, it's all over the place. It's got, you know, bits of ideas here and there. But I mean, punk's my thing, right? I mean, anybody could learn three chords and be a musician and then you just had to put it out there. And that's kind of what I do, right? Just put it out there. Some of it's going to be shit. And some of it works. And hey, if it works for some people, I'm glad to hear back from them. And people bought me a lot of shots and bought a lot of books and I had a great time. And I'm having a great time doing this now that I can do it and not worry about the money because writing don't pay.
I think you just
it's good to be in that position. Tid was asking, and you offered earlier, can you share an excerpt with us from Compassion Fatigue?
Yeah,
I can. And this was essentially written during COVID, and it's a story called Low Rise. And it's, you know, called Low Rise because J.G. Ballard was a great punk writer in the 70s and 80s. He wrote High Rise, and this is like Low Rise. Day 500. Oh, my God. Omicron. Every day is like the other. Wake. Read the news on the smartphone. My mini monolith of narcissism. Marvel at the wonderful lives of others. Meet with work people on a screen that looks like the opening credits from the Brady Bunch, minus catchy tune. Like on the Brady Bunch, you wonder, are these people even supposed to be real? I got a great idea after my second meeting, though. When the meeting was over, I logged on to my favorite porn site and searched Greg and Marsha Brady under mature. Bingo. It's a thing. Trust your instincts. Midwinter, didn't plan for dinner, but a Syrian refugee on a Chinese electric bicycle delivered to me a brilliant chicken biryani from this place I know. It's 8 blocks away and I could have walked there. Since the neighborhood's gentrified, it's getting mad Yelp reviews. The Syrian dude got it here nice and hot despite the blizzard. I was so bored and grateful, I actually talked to the SAP worker for a minute. He said, yeah, the snow sucked, but it beat cluster bombs and chemical weapons. He probably just said what he thought I wanted to hear, so I tip him and give him 5 stars, but he eventually disengaged. He said he wanted to deliver his next order hot too. They lose points for lukewarm food. I gave him 4 stars out of 5. Nobody's perfect.
I love it. Tid looks like he's post-coital.
He's got that little postcoital triste.
No. So I'm okay. So here's, I go visual right away with it, as you're saying, and I try to describe a visual to it. And what I'm seeing is the movie Heavy Metal in my head. That the kind of style, that Ralph Bakshi, that cartoon kind of way of telling the story. Because let's be honest, like it's like following the thoughts of somebody writing in their diary while taking a dump. You know what I mean? Like you've got a certain amount of time and you're like, your brain is on overload and I've got to get this out before I forget about it. Right?
You're the best literary critic I've ever heard. I have to say, wow, you should be literally a literary critic, because you just get right to the point, and that's a beautiful critique. That's a beautiful critique. I'm going to put that on the cover of the next edition. I am. It's just like, wow, people would just buy it based on that.
But this is the society we live in, isn't it? Like, this is exactly when, I mean, we all talk about it. We all do it. Everybody does it. Right. So why not? If this is that is going to be, that's a hell of a base market.
It's a weird way to approach them with this medium, because again, people aren't reading a book, but that's exactly, and actually Heavy Metal.
What sells it is the video that goes along with it in a cartoon format with your voice narrating the whole thing.
Hey man, you know where I can get a good deal on some audio production?
We'll talk.
Okay,
I 100% do.
Because I could work something out. I got a Kindle edition, a soft cover, and a hard cover. But you know,
I think that's where it is, right? If we're talking, you've got the stories are there, the book is there, but being able to get it out to people while they're on that train ride, like Donnie was, instead of having that newspaper and that Sports Illustrated, he's got his phone in front of him, because you know he's already engaged on that phone, and now all of a sudden he's watching this story book that's in this format with you getting over as the voice guy. I'm saying the show might have turned into a business pitch, and I got to get off the elevator now, because this is my floor. Deuces, ladies.
We're just angling for an executive producer credit.
I appreciate the suggestion, because I think that's where I would want to go with it. I know a lot of people now that fully listen to books all the time. They don't read anymore. They're well read per se, but they don't read. They're listening to them all the time.
What I'm saying is the story is well thought out, and you can visualize it very easily. Like it's painted a very, very nice picture. So the next step is just to actually paint that picture.
Yeah,
that's it. But again, you know, essentially that story is about just, you know, random synapse firing off during, you know, COVID and isolation. It's like having been forced to be in solitary confinement for a long time, and then you can think in about 5 or 6 syllables.
Let me ask you a question, because it's a collection of shorts that don't really blend right together. They all kind of stand on their own 2 feet. It comes across as feeling very multi-layered from a narrative perspective, right? In your mind, are you the narrator in all of these? Is it a different narrator depending? Is it your mindset as the narrator in each story? Do you ever feel like the voice for this story is a little different from my own leanings, and now I have to think in a different headspace in order to get this across? What's that process like?
That's hard, because when you read, you're always reading in the same voice, and in your head it sounds different. Like every single voice in here sounds different. Right, you know, Harvey C. Rain's got an Ohio accent, and the yoga guy on the beach in Fuerteventura is, you know, basically very self-centered, and they're totally different voices. But you know, I've only got one voice, and not a voice actor per se. But when you're doing a reading, you gotta manage that. Now, if you could have different people read it, you could cast, you know, the readings, and that would be great. But you just have to be flexible. You have to be flexible and try to read it as well as you can and change the voice. But that is the beauty of reading, is that you hear the voice in your head. Nobody's saying it to you. So then you color it in, you fill in the blanks. And that's the beauty of reading. Unfortunately, for audio, it's different.
You already hinted earlier, you're not afraid of any controversy as it relates to this book. And hey, it might even sell a few copies. So let me give you an opportunity for a fight.
Okay.
In that excerpt that you read, we heard about, the delivery guy on his bike and all that. And it brought back to mind thoughts of our guest last week, Hal Johnson, who was bragging, all braggadocious, about riding his bike across Canada, riding his bike from here to Cleveland. And I said, Hey, Hal. Ever ride a bike with just a little bit of pedal assist? And he looked at me like I just told him I slept with his 94-year-old mother. He was so annoyed and so irritated that I dared. He's like, e-bike? What? And I literally dropped your name and I said, hey, my cousin's got a couple of e-bikes and he fucking loves them, baby. Come on, start a fight with Hal Johnson.
Hal Johnson, come on. Seriously, you like to ride your bike. I love to ride a bike. But seriously, if you really want to use a bike for transportation, what's wrong with an e-bike? And, there's all kinds of them. They're great. You can now travel all around the city, get around cars, and you don't have to pedal all the time. I could ride my bike to work and not get there covered in sweat because, hey, you don't always have a shower at work, and you sure as hell don't want to get there, smelling like yesterday's lunch. So e-bikes are awesome. They're great. You have to keep people from riding them on the sidewalk because I've seen a few scooters there by people that are riding e-bikes because they've had a few DUIs. But, people follow the rules, which I do. I've got 500-watt e-bikes. Why not? Okay, I'm 62 years old. I love riding a bike, and I love my e-bikes. I got other bikes, too. But there's nothing wrong with e-bikes, so get off that purist high horse and, accept all kinds of environmentally sustainable, friendly transportation for all kinds of people.
I feel like we should invite Hal out for an e-bike joyride. I think if he sat on your chopper just once, he'd fall in love.
Mm-hmm. Hey, kids in Montreal put that thing together. Beautiful, easy, Will. Get one.
Ted, would you ride an e-bike? No.
More to my house, Ted. I got two.
What if there was a pouch in it where you had a pound of weed on the back? No.
Got a pouch.
I would willingly, if you have an e-bike, I would willingly ride in a sidecar.
What? Your big ass in a sidecar?
I'm just saying that's the only way it's gonna happen, brother.
I got a trailer.
Even better, like a red wagon with me. Oh yeah, you'd be popping wheelies the entire fucking time. Let's face facts. Listen,
we would be planning your funeral after that because you're not surviving that ride.
I'd be high. Here, I've got one question because I know I want to thank you so much for taking the time of being with us. We are we're keeping you far too long than we should, but I do have one question that I want to ask before we go. Did you used to make up a lot of shit when you were a kid to get out of trouble?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you?
Oh yeah. Oh shit. On the spot.
I ask that with the utmost respect because being able to come up with these stories, I feel like it's something that you've done for a very long time and you're just now finding a way to put them out into a book form. So that's why I asked that because, I knew other kids that as a young adult may or may not have been able to spin a yarn or two to get themselves out of trouble. So what was your best one?
Whoa, you put me on the spot here.
I don't think your mom's going to tune into this either. I was a kid, right?
And then, the parents would come home and you'd throw the butts into the toilet. But one time one didn't fall in the toilet, fell in the carpet by the toilet. And, my mom goes into the bathroom and it's like, oh my God, you're smoking. And it's like, I'm not smoking, and the window was open. So it's like somebody must have been coming in here to have a shit and have a smoke, right? And I vaguely remember that, but it just didn't work. didn't work at all.
My little brother used one once because they lived in a high-rise building at one point in time. My little brother used one once where he said that somebody had come to the door to borrow 3 beers out of the fridge because he drank them.
I had free wine at home, so that was never an issue. I could just go to the barrel and, you know, fill up a bottle and nobody would be the wiser because you couldn't see through the barrel.
It's tremendous. It's tremendous.
That was the way the Portuguese kids smuggled alcohol.
Yeah. For me, it was making excuses for smoking at 13. You know, like, why did the house smell like smoke? It's like, somebody must have broken and smoked.
Hey, I want to ask you this before we go. You being the punk aficionado that you are, if we've got a young millennial or a young Gen Z that's tuning in and you had to, and they said, hey, look, I don't know anything about punk rock, but I'm willing to give it a try. 3 bands, you tell them, this is your starter list. This is what you want to pick up.
I want to hear this.
Bad Religion.
Okay. I knew that was there.
Bad Religion. I just love Bad Religion. The Clash. I mean, you've got to give it to the Clash. And then if you wanted something a little bit unknown, probably The Selector, British kind of punk ska band, Pauline Black, Polystyrene. There's a whole bunch of bands in that genre. The Selector would be probably my favorite. So ska, you know, I'd have to say Selector, Clash, Bad Religion. That covers, you know, both sides of the ocean. And that's what I would recommend as a starter pack for punk.
It's not bad. Tib, you look like you disagree.
Yeah, just a little bit. I can agree with Bad Religion 100%.
Okay.
The Clash has one too many letters in their name, as far as I'm concerned. And if I'm going to go number 2 and 3, not necessarily in any 1, 2, and 3 order, because I have to go Descendants. And I probably have to go Operation Ivy if I'm going to pick that kind of crossover punk and ska sound, as you say, for a starter kit before getting too crazy with people.
Okay. But well, yeah. I'm going to go and do some listening. Not super familiar with Operation Ivy.
Really? Oh, fantastic. Yeah. It's the guys from, some of the guys from Rancid, and it's fantastic stuff. It is some of the best work. It's super.
See, I would go a different direction, and not that I'm as much of a punk aficionado as you two gentlemen, but if I was helping someone get started, I'd probably go Pistols, Ramones, Black Flag.
Yeah. Cause you shop at Le Chateau.
I was going to wear a Black Flag t-shirt. I'm glad I didn't go there. Okay. But Pistols, Flash in the Pan, beautiful moment, but then you know that was gone.
But if you're trying to introduce someone to the genre, if you're trying to introduce someone, that's a gateway punk.
No, that's like if you're trying to show somebody, if you're trying to say to somebody, hey, I'm going to introduce you to film, and all of a sudden you show them the Toxic Avenger. That's it. That's all they're done after that. You want to sustain them. So I understand, like, Bad Religion is a fantastic band to be able to sustain people listening to the genre, right? Just like Descendants are every punk band's favorite punk band, you know, they're like a Fugazi. Right.
Yeah.
They're like a minor threat. They're like a, you know what I mean? But like, just fantastic. Descendants and all, love them. Right. So you want people to stick around. If you're just showing them a car crash, you show them the Sex Pistols.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, the most interesting thing about the Sex Pistols was them just flying apart. Right. And then they were designed to do that. Like, you know, Malcolm McLaren basically designed that to be a flash in the pan, and it was. And then they just kept going. And I mean, I've seen the Sex Pistols play a few times and stuff, but I think, you know, John Lydon's just disgraced himself. He's just gone, you know, completely off his rocker. I disagree on the Clash. I disagree on the Clash. I think that the Clash did a lot of good things. I know where you're saying, that eventually it became a very much of a commercial outfit. But you know,
were the Ramones too mainstream? We can't we can't give the Ramones any love. They were too.
Oh,
they
no,
were
no,
too
hold
pop.
On a second. Wait. No, I love the Ramones. I saw the Ramones every time I could. I lost a lot of hearing to the Ramones. But you know, they did something really well over and over again, right?
Yeah.
You know, that 2 minute pop, and it was beautiful, and they paid respect to all of their influences, you know, whether it's California, surf rock, everything. And I love the Ramones. But you know, you listen, you could give somebody, okay, this was New York punk and they were seminal very early on. But I, again, you know, to go to what Tid said, I don't know that it would sustain somebody in the genre for all that long.
Fair enough. I'm only looking on ramps, baby. That's it. Okay. You know what? Listen, 24 minutes ago, we all wanted to be sedated, and we've probably beaten this cow dry. Umberto da Silva, tell everyone out there, where can they get the book? Where can they find you if they want to find out more?
You can go to my, you know, poorly constructed website, which I need help with. You know, remember I helped you with your homework, at umbertodasilva.ca. You can go to Amazon and look up Compassion Fatigue, put my name in it so you don't get like some kind of psychological manual. And, otherwise, I'll be out there.
Love it. And the link will be up on godfathersofpodcasting.com. We'll make sure that we'll get a link to the book. You can pick it up, Compassion Fatigue. I've been reading it. I'm not done yet. I'm absolutely loving it. And I'm like Tid, I don't read a lot, you know, I don't have time. And this is perfect. Bite-sized little bits of digestible goodness. And it's really, really highly recommended. Please go check it out. Thanks so much, Beth. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you, Tid. And see you soon.
All right.
I'm going to go have some of that. Let's drink to the dead and remember them.
I'm tipping one for you and for our fallen brothers. Here we go.
Okay. Enjoy.
Good night. There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. That is my cousin, Umberto da Silva. And for some people who may not know this, I know Tid knows this, and I'm not going to tell too many tales out of school, but I will say this. My name, Donnie da Silva,
what?
It's not my actual name.
No, it's not. I didn't want to tell people about that.
It's been my on-air name for more than 10, 12 years, dating back through this show and other shows that I've done. My name, Donnie da Silva, is a tribute to that man that was just on here, as well as all of the da Silvas in my family, because there are many of them. But
wow, not fucking Uncle Terry da Silva. That guy was weird.
Who's he?
I don't know. Everybody had one, didn't they?
There's no Portuguese Terrys.
Well, good thing I picked that name then. I didn't offend anybody for real.
If you had said Manny, it could have been like 14 different people.
Yeah, everybody would have been all up in fucking arms. I would have had knocks at my door. Fuck that.
Listen, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That guy, Bethu, he's long been a friend, a mentor, someone that I definitely looked up to. Oftentimes, much like you, I refer to him as the smartest person in the room. But when he's in the room, you're no longer the smartest person in the room. I'm sorry.
I never claimed to be the smartest person in the room. That's always something that other people have said. And I just looked at them and realized I was just in the room with only them.
With stupid people.
We were all standing in a fucking closet. Okay. It was not a room. It was the broom closet.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this week's episode has been dedicated to our fallen brothers.
Absolutely.
Corporal Nathaniel Lynch, yes. Rob Rage Thompson.
Of course.
Rest in peace, both of you. Gone way too soon. Very different circumstances, but tragic nonetheless. Tid, any parting thoughts before we wrap this one up?
You know what? Just that you can check out all of the stuff, as it says right there, at Tid Talk on YouTube. I want to thank the fine folks over at SNME Radio, of course. Check out all of the shows that are over there. Special thank you to Donnie da Silva for doing his wrap up and sending in what was an absolutely stellar review of WWE's Crown Jewel. I must say, if you haven't listened to it, you get to hear Donnie at his absolute best, which is without me. No interruptions. It was very well done. So thank you so much for that. All of that stuff available. Please check out all of the other shows on SNME Radio as well. Other than that, I will be doing a special birthday edition of TID Talks this weekend. So, you know, you can check that out as well. Plus all of the other fun stuff, like I said, over at TIDTALK on YouTube. That's about it for me, brother.
There you go. Happy 65th, Tid. Thanks to everyone for joining us. Episode 158 is in the books. That's Chris. I'm Donnie. We'll see you next time.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of
here. Fuck this shit, I'm out.